So, welcome to the course called Gaussian Integrals and Variational Calculus. So, this mini course will consist of four lectures, and the first two lectures will be devoted to the Gaussian integrals, while the other two lectures will be devoted to the variational calculus. So, this course will consist of two parts. The parts will be quite disjoint from each other. So, the topics covered in the first part will be as follows. One-dimensional and multi-dimensional Gaussian integrals and averages with the Gaussian weight. So these two topics will be covered today, while tomorrow we will consider imaginary Gaussian integrals as well as Grassmann variables and Gaussian integrals with these variables. So if you have any questions, just don't hesitate to interrupt me. I will be happy to answer them. I'm pretty much sure that many of you already saw the Gaussian integrals that play a very important role in physics, especially statistical physics, quantum field theory, and even quantum mechanics. But I think that for many of you, this material will be useful because we will obtain the results that could be quite handy if you subsequently listen to the lectures on quantum field theory, for example. Okay, let's start with something very simple, namely one-dimensional Gaussian integrals. I will show you how these integrals are computed. One-dimensional Gaussian integrals. So when we talk about Gaussian integral in one dimension, we first of all mean this integral. Let's call it y. The integral from minus infinity to infinity, e minus ax squared divided by 2 dx. Clearly, for the convergence, we must have a greater than 0, or if it is a complex variable, then its real part must be greater than 0. So you may wonder how to calculate this integral. Of course, everyone knows how to calculate, for example, the integral from 0 to infinity of this thing, e in power minus ax dx. That this is a usual exponential integral. But the question is how to obtain the result for this integral. And the trick that people use to calculate this integral I is as follows. One considers not I, but the integral I squared . So one simply takes the same integral I, but with the other variable of integration, and considers this integral I squared, integral of this integrand over dx and dy from minus infinity to infinity. So this integral is tractable because, in fact, we can go to the polar coordinates in the xy plane. And this is the integral over the whole plane. So if we make the substitution x equal to r cosine phi, y equal to r sine phi, then we can write that this integral I squared will be equal to the integral over the whole plane r dr e in power minus a r squared divided by 2, then integral over the polar angle over phi from 0 to 2 pi, and we just simply switch to polar coordinates. We just simply see that everything is pretty much tractable here. We make the change of variable and get that this will be 2 pi divided by a, and the integral from 0 to infinity dt in power minus t. we just make the change of variable t equal to a r squared divided by 2. So as a result, we get simply 2 pi divided by a. Hence, the integral I will be equal to the square root of 2 pi divided by a. So this is the value of the simplest Gaussian integral that one can encounter in applications. So following from this, we can consider a slightly more complicated integral that will be a function of two parameters, a and b. It is equal to minus infinity to infinity e in power ax squared divided by 2. And here we have plus bx dx. It is more complicated because in addition to the quadratic term and the exponent, there is a linear term, right? And this integral can be also computed if we set x equal to y plus b over a. So we can write that minus ax squared over 2 plus bx will be equal to minus ay squared divided by 2 minus by minus b squared over 2a to a if you substitute x plus by plus b squared over a. So the linear term cancels, and we are going to have minus ay squared divided by 2 plus b squared divided by 2a. So as a result, we will have I equal to the integral from minus infinity to infinity dy e in power minus a y squared divided by 2, e in power b squared divided by 2a. This is just a constant. And we will have 2 pi divided by a times e in power b squared divided by 2a. So again, it is important that we have a greater than 0 here. So in order for the Gaussian integral to make sense, well, we consider a real. We consider the complex parameters a bit later. So any questions with this quite simple material? So obviously, the integral involving only one variable is quite simple, right? And of course, in field theoretical applications, when people consider integrations over many modes, it is important to know how to calculate multi-dimensional Gaussian integrals. Multi-dimensional Gaussian integrals. So here we're going to consider the following integral: I of large a b. So I will write it this way, equal to the measure of integration, or is the product of all measures, exponent minus 1 half sum over ij from 1 to n, x I a I j x j plus sum over I from 1 to n bi xi, where A is a n by n symmetric real matrix, and B is a vector. So X is in fact a vector as well in the n-dimensional space. So this is the integral in which the integration is performed over all variables xi, but those variables enter under exponent in this combination. So the point that A is a symmetric real matrix is essential here, and this is what people are dealing with in applications in quantum field theory and statistical physics. So that's what we'll be considering only this case. So the question is how to deal with these integrals and what we should expect when we try to calculate this integral using already known results for one-dimensional Gaussian integrals. So consider first a simple case. Case A, let's call it this way. Case A, in which matrix A is diagonal. Diagonal in space of dimension n. So diagonal matrix with all AI greater than zero. Down the road, let me mention that it is convenient. Yes, sir.
Why is it important for A to be a symmetric real matrix?
It is not that important to be real, but more important that it is symmetric.
So why have it as a symmetric matrix? What property?
But you can, if you see the xi, aij, xj, exchanging xi and xj symmetric. So if A is not symmetric, it will vanish down the anti.
It will. One should simply has to consider more complicated calculations. But we will be dealing only with symmetric matrices because this is all what is important in physical applications, in fact.
Does that mean that A is invertible?
Absolutely. I will mention this. So we also, of course, imply, I will mention this, that the inverse matrix exists. Right. So the determinant is not zero. So the diagonal matrix with all, first of all, AI greater than zero. So down the road, let me point out at the fact that it is convenient when we do manipulations to use the Einstein summation convention. So that is common in field theory and linear algebra. Einstein, the summation convention. So namely that 1/2 the sum a I j from 1 to n x I a I j x j is just the same. We skip the sign of sum and write this way x I a I j x j and sum over I from 1 to n of b I xi will be the same as simply bi xi. So the summation over repeated indices are implied. Of course, if in places where it may lead to the confusion, we should write the sum explicitly. So So if A is diagonal, then we can simply notice that this integral is the product of ordinary one-dimensional Gaussian integrals with the corresponding AI and BI. And we can write that for case A.
Dennis, yep. A, A doesn't have to be positive, a positive matrix for that integral to have sense.
A must be imaginary, but with the real part positive.
All right.
So we will assume that in the future that Aij is in general diagonalizable.
Right.
So if it is diagonalized, then what stands on diagonals must have positive real parts.
Right. Okay.
But in general, it can be imaginary. In the most general, but the real parts must satisfy certain conditions. So in this case, we can straightforwardly write down the answer to this integral equal to the product of the corresponding Gaussian integrals. Product square root 2 pi divided by ai times e in power bi squared divided by 2ai. Or if we notice that for diagonal matrix, the determinant of this matrix is the product of all ai, then we can write this real result as follows, that it will be equal to 2 pi n over 2 divided by the square root of determinant A times the product of I from 1 to n e in power bi squared divided by 2 ai. So this is the result for the case in which matrix A is diagonal. Okay, so after we obtain this result, it makes sense to consider a more general case in which A is not diagonal, call it case B. A is not diagonal, but still symmetric and by N matrix. So, is not the diagonal, but still a symmetric matrix that has size by n, n by n. We will also assume that, and this is very important, that the determinant of this matrix is greater than zero. It's not equal to zero, meaning that the inverse matrix A minus 1 exists. So in other words, matrix A is invertible. And in order to attack the integral written above with this more general matrix, one first of all can ask a question. Can we eliminate the linear terms that prevent us from proceeding as we did with the one-dimensional Gaussian integral? And the answer is yes. When we use the following transformation. Use the change of variables, xi equal to a minus 1 ij, bj plus yi. So this is the change of variable. So let's check that this change of variable eliminates the linear terms. We will have using Einstein summation conventions. So xi aij xj plus bi xi equal to minus 1/2 a minus 1 I j b j plus y j a I k times a minus 1 k l b l plus y k plus b I a minus 1 I j b j plus y I. So when we manipulate with this expression, it is essential that we have different indices of summation labeled differently in order to avoid confusion. So we will have minus 1/2 bk a minus 1 kl bl minus 1/2 yi aik yk minus 1/2 yi bi minus 1/2 bk yk plus bi a minus 1 ij bj plus bi yi. So this linear terms and this cancel each other. Cancel each other, and these terms, this term with the minus sign is 1/2 of this term. So we have as a result that this will be equal to 1/2 by a minus 1 ij bj minus 1/2 yi a yj a ij yj. Meaning that for our integral, we have a more palatable result. I a b equal to exponent 1/2 b I a minus 1 I j b j. So this is the constant. This is the constant prefactor that stands before integral, and the integral product I from 1 to n dy I exponent minus 1/2 y I a I j y j. So from now on, we will be working with this integral. We have just achieved. Yes, yes. Any questions?
The Jacobian of that transformation is one. You're just shifting the.
We have just shifted at this point. So. It is one because there's a constant, exactly. So we will be working with this in integral, and the next step we are going to employ is to diagonalize what stands under the sign of exponent. So we know that A is real symmetric, its determinant is positive, so and the inverse matrix exists. So all this means that there exists some orthogonal matrix that diagonalizes this bilinear form. So we can write that there exists some matrix, also n by n, of course, O that is orthogonal. Such that the matrix O A O has only non-zero elements on diagonals. And these elements coincide with the eigenvalues of matrix A that we label by lambdas on diagonals coinciding.
Then,
yep.
You're missing a
transpose. Absolutely. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Coinciding with eigenvalues lambda I. I will go to this part. So what we're then going to do, we're going to use change of variables yi equal to o I j times y j tilde. So this will be our new variables, and we get the following: minus 1/2 y I a I j y j will be equal to minus 1/2 y k tilde o I k a I j o j l y tilde l. And because this will coincide with lambda k delta k l, we will have that this will be j here k i, yeah, of course, k I A I J O J L. So we will have that this is equal to sum over all I from 1 to n eigenvalues lambda I times Y I tilde squared. What we did, we simply used the change of variables that diagonalizes the quadratic form written here. We know that we can do this because we made some assumptions about the form of the matrix A. Then here we have to take care of the measure. And here we have to invoke the Jacobian. We must check that the Jacobian does not change. So, sorry, the Jacobian is equal to 1 because we're using the linear transformation involving orthogonal matrix. So also, we have that the product from 1 to n of dyi equal to the absolute value of Jacobian product dyi tilde. So where the Jacobian j, that is in general, and let me remind you once again, it will be this determinant, actually the absolute value of the determinant here, we have the absolute Jacobian, yeah, the absolute value of this determinant, dy1 over dy1 tilde and so forth is the determinant of the n by n matrix, dyn over dy1 tilde, and here dy1 over dyn tilde, dyn over dyn tilde. So, and it is equal to, so as we see from this expression, OY1, ON, and here, ON1, ONN. But this is equal to 1 because O is orthogonal. This is remarkable because we don't have to worry about the different prefactors when we make this change of variables and plug it into this integral. So this just means that we can make the substitution and invoke this result. So thus, we can straightforwardly write down that I of A, B equal to 2 pi times n over 2 divided by determinant of matrix A times exponent 1 half bi A minus 1 b j. Actually, I j a minus 1 I j b j. So this is the main result of the Gaussian integration in the space of many n variables. And this result is really, really important to remember because you will encounter this quite often in your courses. In many situations, of course, you will be dealing with the cases in which Aij is simply already diagonal. So you should remember this result and this result also. So it is especially widely, it is used in condensed matter and statistical physics theories when people deal with the so-called Hubbard-Stratanovich transformation that due to some kind of shifts of variables, shifts of modes, and integrating out some modes, one switches from one bilinear form to the other bilinear form. So if you look at the answer, you will see that you also have exponent, but the exponent contains the inverse matrix Aij. Okay, any questions here? Yeah.
So A is a positive definite matrix.
Yeah. Okay. So if there are no questions, then I will start considering something also very, very interesting and very important that will be also useful for you in the future. So I will talk about the so-called Wicks theorem, how it follows from the Gaussian integrals. I should tell you that you may encounter many, versions of the so-called Wicks theorem. It's a naturally a physical theorem, but if you encounter this, you should keep in mind that this theorem is in fact a result of Gaussian integration, ordinary Gaussian integration. When one employs the averages of products of some variables with this Gaussian weight. So let's consider the following averages. Averages with Gaussian weight. We will be interested in calculating the averages of the following type: xk1, xk2, multi-dot xkm equal to some constant n. I will tell what this constant is. N times the integral measure product of the x y's xk1, xk2, so forth, xkm exponent minus 1 half xy, xi, sorry, a, I, j, x, j. With n being the normalization constant, namely, with n, I will use the letter calligraphic n, with n, let's say n minus 1, equal to the integral dxy minus 1 half xy I j xj. So, and in fact, n minus 1 is nothing else than I of a with the vector b equal to 0. Question?
Is the index down there, it goes k1 through km?
Or yeah, k1 to km. It's just,
okay. So it's the same as the dimension.
It's just a notation. We use this, I decided to use this index because we have the letters a, I, j, k, l standing here. So I just decided to use this type of notation. Yeah, k1, k2, and so forth until km. And of course, K1, K2, Km, they are one of those axes, of course. And we work in the n by n dimensional space again. So what's this? Where could you see this type of average? Of course, in statistical physics, mainly in classical statistical physics. For example, averages using Boltzmann distribution or using Maxwell distribution and those things. So we know that this I of A 0, 0 equal to pi n over 2 divided by square root of the determinant A. So the normalization factor is important and convenient and a good thing that while dealing with those averages, we don't have to put everywhere this prefactor. So quite often it is easy to forget it. So the question is how to calculate those types of averages. In order to find a convenient way how to do this, we will use the property that this integral is convergent quite fast. quite fast because we imply that matrix AIJ is positive definite, and the integral converges exponentially fast. So we can write that the integral I from 1 to n dx I xk1 and so forth xkm exponent minus 1 half xi a I j x j plus bi xi, we reinstate the linear term, equal to the product of derivatives d over d b k1, so forth, d over d b k m of this integral I a with b. What we did, we simply took the integral written there and differentiated it with respect to different components of vector b, corresponding to the component k wide and k2, k3, and so forth, and up to component km. And this, in fact, allows us to write the average in the following form. X, average of x k1, k2, and so forth up to xkm equal to n d over d b k1 d over d b k m I a b with b taken to zero after performing the differentiation, that is equal to equal to this construction d over d b k1 multi dots d over d b k m exponent 1 half b I a minus 1 I j v j. And when we take the derivatives with respect to bk1 and bkm, we set b equal to 0. What we did, we simply plugged the result for the integral iab. And the prefactor n, so I said cancels.
Yep. I'm not sure about the second line on mm-hmm. this board. How do you get the string of derivatives times? So
you're not sure about this line.
This line, yeah.
So we simply exchange the operation of integration and differentiation over components of B.
Okay.
So we in the integrate over parameters. So for example, if we take the derivative with respect to bk1 in this expression, right? Exponent will generate the prefactor xk1. If subsequently we take the derivative, already another derivative,
okay.
One more derivative, say over component BK2, and here we have the sum over all components, then this generates here the prefactor XK2, and so forth, until we reach the component BKM that will generate the prefactor XKM. Mm-hmm. Nakis.
Does the order of X matter in?
No.
Then why are we writing the subscripts as K1, Kn? Couldn't we write 1, 2, 3, 2n?
We could. I simply used this letter K, K1, K2, K3. No, the order doesn't matter here. No. It's just the standard usual variable. So. This is the general prescription. This average is equal to the product of this derivative applied to this exponent. And after the differentiation is done, we set b equal to 0. So let's check what we have if we apply this to only two variables. For example, let's write x k xl. So I decided to use better letters, simply it may be more convenient. Xk times xl equal to d over d bk d over d bl exponent 1 half bi a minus 1 I j bj so and after this we set v equal to 0. Let's differentiate over bl first. Here we have the sum over all possible components from 1 to n. We get d over d bk. Yeah, questions? Okay. So when we encounter among either bi or bj the component b corresponding to index k, we have to differentiate, and this will generate the prefactor a minus 1 lm bm exponent 1 half bi a ij minus 1 bj and after that b must be set equal to 0. Does everyone understand why we have this construction a minus 1 lm bm, but not one half of this?
Because it's a quadratic form. So you use the product rule and you have the same two terms.
Exactly, yeah. So we must imply that the component with index l comes from here and from here. And because a matrix is symmetric, this gives this construction as a prefactor. So then we should remember that at the very end, we should set b equal to 0. B equal to 0. This means that the only way we can get non-zero result if we differentiate only with taking the derivative over bk, we differentiate only this part, but not the exponent. Because if we subsequently differentiate this exponent over bk, we get further prefactors of this form. And if subsequently we set b equal to 0, those contributions will be 0. So we need to differentiate only this. So here we have the sum over m, and we, of course, encounter the component with index k. So we are going to have just a minus 1 l k. We, of course, mean that after that we set b equal to 0, so exponents turns to 1. So x, the average of xk xl is equal to the component, to the component or the term of the inverse matrix with the indices L and K. So any questions about this? So if there are no questions, we will consider a more complicated case. But first of all, let me notice that the product of three variables, for example, xk, xl, xm, must necessarily be equal to 0. Why? Because the simple answer is to look at the definition of this average and to notice that the integrand containing exponent is symmetric with respect to the inversion of the vector x by minus x. So if we have three, the products of three components, xk, xl, and xm, then it must be 0 because it is odd. So here, this is odd if there are three x's and this is even. So the result must be equal to 0. Thus, we're going to consider the product of four variables, xk, or I will write again this way, xk1, xk2, because otherwise there will be too many letters, xk3, xk4. Again, we write the chain of derivatives, d over d bk1, d over d bk2, d over d bk3, d over d bk4 exponent. I will write for the simplicity of no notations this form. Exponents with multi dots. So the exponent with multi dots means exactly this exponent that is written here. Exponents with multi dots is equal to exponent of 1 half b I a I j minus 1 b j. Oh, this is the last word. It's so unfortunate because I missed. Quite sad. So I indeed used the wrong word. So I have to erase probably, but that's fine. We have plenty of time. So I will use this. Okay, so we're going to continue. So to continue from here. So let's take first the derivative with respect to bk4. So xk1, xk2, xk3, xk4 will be equal to. So when we take the derivatives with respect to bk4, we will have. So the derivatives bk3, and here we have the following construction. A, again, minus 1 k4 m, b m exponent, our x exponent. And would be equal to 0 set after the differentiation. Now we take next the derivative with respect to bk3. We must differentiate this term and differentiate this term. So what will happen, we're going to have two terms, d over d bk1, d over d bk2. Here, a minus 1. So when we differentiate this, k3 must be equal to m, and we have k4, k3, exponent, plus one more such construction, k4, m, bm, and a minus 1, k3, l, another index of summation, BL, and the exponent. At the very end, we must put B equal to 0. Now, what we see? We see that when we subsequently differentiate over BK2 and BK1 of this exponent, we should get the result that we have here. And when we differentiate the second term, again, we must keep in mind that we should not differentiate exponent, because if we differentiate exponent, there will be more prefactors of B, and such contributions will be 0 when we set B equal to 0. So thus, if we look at this term, we must differentiate only these two constructions. And here, when we differentiate with respect to BK2 and BK1, we can have two choices. That either something, one of the BLs equal to K2 and one of BMs equal to K1, or vice versa, one of BLs equal to K1 and one of BMs equal to K2. Thus, we get two terms from differentiating this second term. So altogether, we just get the following. A k 4 k 3 minus 1 k 4 k 3 times a minus 1 k 2 k 1 plus a minus 1 k 4 k 2 a minus 1 k 3 k 1 plus a minus 1, k4, k1, a minus 1, k3, k2. So this is our final answer. Any questions? How did this final answer was obtained? Simply using the differentiation chain rule. So we should notice that schematically, we can just simply write that this average of products of these four variables can be written as the sum of products of some averages. Namely, we can, this product equal to, sorry, this average is equal to x, the xk4 k3 average times xk2 xk1 average plus x, the average of xk4 xk2 times the average of xk3 xk1 plus the following product of average of xk4 xk1 times xk3 xk2 and the average of this. So this formula that the average of the products of four variables is equal to the sum of products of average of this kind constitutes the essence of the so-called Wicks theorem that you will often see in quantum field theory and quantum condensed matter theory. This is Wicks theorem. So the average of the product of the even number of variables x with the corresponding indices is equal to this, to the sum of averages of products of all possible pairs. We look at the expression that stands under the sign of average and make all possible pairs of variables. Take their averages and sum the appropriate combinations. So, of course, this result can be generalized to the case of arbitrary even number of variables.
You say it's the product of all possible pairs of
averages. So it is the sum of the products of averages of all possible pairs.
Yeah, but in this case, each product must have the four different indices, right?
Each term, each term in the sum must have the different indices. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's all possible pairs that I have with that constraint that every index appears in each of the terms.
Well, you're asking the question whether, for example, K4 can be equal to K3 in reality.
No. It's why doesn't it appear, for example, a term like XK4, XK3, XK4, XK1, which will be another combination of.
It's equivalent because if you just say keep XK1 and then you can have it along with it XK2, XK3, or XK4, and as soon as you choose an index alongside XK1, the other two are taken care of because they have to fall into the other product.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why you only get three possible terms.
Yeah.
Right. All right. You only have repeated things because you only have one derivative.
The other two, you don't have to worry about their permutations or combinations of other ones. They get immediately taken care of.
You simply form all possible combinations looking at your initial expression under the sign of variable. So this just means that so if we have the average of n variables, for example, x1, x2, so forth, xn, then we will have n minus 1 double factorials. This is n minus 1, n minus 3, and so forth up to 1 possible pairings. So if n is equal to 4, for example, then there will be 3 possible pairings. If n is equal to 1, then there will be only 1 possible pairing. So in fact, the number of terms in the average increases quite essentially. This one, n minus 1 times n minus 3, and yeah.
So it's just you subtract
yeah.
n minus 1 minus 5.
Yeah. And so forth. This is the result in general if you have many variables in your product. Okay, that's pretty all for lecture one. And since we have some time, we will start considering move forward and consider more complicated things, slightly more complicated things, because tomorrow I will devote a lot of time to Grassmann variables. I'm pretty much sure that this topic is more interesting than this one. So, but now I will start considering the topic called imaginary Gaussian integrals and how to calculate the Gaussian integrals when what stands under the sign of exponent is imaginary. I will start today and will continue tomorrow.
Sorry, can you just the second board? So if you have a list of n, you always have n minus 1 pairs, right? Or not?
You always have n minus 1 double factorial pairs.
N minus 1
double factorial? Yeah.
What's a double factorial?
Double factorial, it is the product of n minus 1 times n minus 3 and so forth until you reach 1. It is defined only when n is even.
Okay.
You can't have an odd. Yeah.
Okay.
Should the indices, I know that SKSL is not the same as, the average of SKSL is not the same as the average of SLSK.
It's what average?
The average of SKSL is not the same as the average of SLSK, right?
It is not the
same.
It's not the same average as SLSK. It is the same. It is the same because we assume that matrix AKL is symmetric and the inverse matrix is symmetric as well.
We're still dealing with classical objects.
Yeah, we're dealing with classical objects.
And everything, if I take the, for example, for the n, the average of n points, I can put it in terms of the average of n minus 2 points, right? And it reduces until I can write as a product of just products of 2-point functions, right?
This is the Wicks theorem.
So in order to prove that, let's just make induction over this example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's start considering the following topic. So imaginary Gaussian integrals. So what we will be talking about? Let's consider the following integral, I1 equal to minus the integral of minus infinity to plus infinity dx times e in power I a x squared divided by 2. I is, so a will be assumed first positive. A is real, and we first emphasize, assume that a is positive. So this is the integral called imaginary Gaussian integral. So you may wonder whether this integral converges or no. The answer is it converges. It converges because from intuitive, not strictly mathematical point of view, the integrand I a x squared divided by 2 oscillates very rapidly. And when x is large going to infinity, then the positive contributions compensate negative, almost compensate negative contributions and so forth. So this is a very highly oscillatory integrand. And when the integrand is highly oscillatory, then at infinity, it may converge. Of course, the convergence is due to the high power of x, relatively high power of x. So you have here x squared. Or you may have other integer power, for example, x in power of 4 the power of high integer. But if you have the first power of x, then definitely this integral won't converge. It will give you the delta function. Is this integral that gives you delta function, it is not the conventional integral and cannot be ascribed to the class of convergent integrals. But if you have x squared here, then this integral converges. And there is the specific proof of this using the methods of the theory of complex variables. So you had the course on complex variables, right? And you know what the contour means, how the contours are drawn. So what happens if we go to the complex plane? Just I will use three minutes and we will probably stop here. So this is our axis x, right? And we integrate from minus infinity to infinity. This is our axis y. And overall, this is the complex plane z. So z equal to x plus I y. So what happens if we consider the integration over the contour and choose the contour as follows? We take very, very distant point on the negative semi-axis, x, move along x-axis, then almost up to, almost up to infinity, then go along the circle of large radius r, it's called so. So until the point that constitutes the angle of pi over 4 with the line drawn from this point to the center of coordinates, go along this line, and then go back. So this is r, this is minus r, and we take this contour going here, here, then here, going here, going here, and going back here. So our integral of interest will correspond to the path between point minus r on the x-axis and point r on the same axis with r taking up to infinity. We imagine this contour and imagine that those points minus r and r, they are stretched up to infinity. And we consider the integral over this contour e power I a z squared over 2 dz over this contour. Can anyone tell me what the value of this integral is going to be? If we consider
the whole contour?
The whole contour. Okay, can anyone else tell the answer? Is it zero? Mm-hmm. Any other? Yeah, yes, it is zero. Can anyone tell me why? Yeah, because this is a very analytic function. It doesn't have any poles, any essential points. So the integral over the closed contour must be zero. And we will use this property already tomorrow to get the answer for this integral. Okay, let this probably stop for today.
Do you not have any complications when you cut, because you mm-hmm. the contour cuts through itself?
Yeah, but the,
no.
The integrand is even, so you can consider just half of the contour.
Exactly, yeah.
Even so,
there is no complication.
You can even just consider